Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, I'm happy to report that we were the victors in the Lords of Limited versus Team Resources team draft showdown that takes place once every format, and we are only now down in the whole series overall 4-7. So I'm a little conflicted. I'm glad that they're no longer doubling us up. I'm glad that we were the victors, but I also just feel slightly ashamed still when we look at the overall record. How do you process that?
I think only the latest result matters. You know, you're only as good as your latest result. I think that's a classic saying, of course.
That's right. We did it in the playoffs. This was the playoffs. We won the playoffs. New season.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, people joke on Twitter, I think, when they're like, this is the Super Bowl for me. Or maybe they are slightly serious about, you know, I think there are a lot of folks out there who look forward to the Lowell versus LR showdown every set. I mean, we call it like a high stakes limited event, even though there's often nothing on the line other than pride. This time we did play for buying the other team dinner, but there's not often anything on the line, but we all take it super seriously. We all really want to win. So there's a ton of pride on the line. And I have to say, I do take pride in 7-2-ing Team Resources the other day.
Heck yeah. Feels good.
Does feel good. So we are, you know, I don't want it to seem like we only go over these when we win, because that's not true. But I also don't often want to go over these when we lose. And we did even say even before, you know, we had a sort of backup plan for this week's episode, but we knew the showdown was happening on Tuesday. We're like, hey, let's wait and see what the draft logs look like. And if they're interesting, if there's like, you know, ripples around the table, whatever, because it's nice to have an opportunity to look at, you know, we used to be able to do sort of like a look around the table at a, you know, pro tour draft, but rip those for now. But we do get to sort of look at it in the context of team draft. And even though team draft is slightly different, I think the sort of the days of hook and cut are kind of behind us with how high playables are in modern limited sets. And so you often do get a flavor feel for what that's like of, okay, what sort of archetypes are people getting into? How do people step on each other's toes, et cetera, find the open lane? So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to look at the full team draft debrief from the other day. But before we get into that, just a few housekeeping things to take care of. First things first is the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. We always say that new set season is the great time to get in on the Discord, which is what everybody gets access to by giving back via the Patreon. But honestly, I mean, new set season sort of feels like it's, you know, depending on how you're viewing it, sort of comes around the corner every week in a way. You're always sort of, you know, it's like, oh my God, this new set dropped. And then, oh my gosh, it's preview season already. But there's also been just a ton of high stakes limited events. And like I said last week, that's a great time to get in on the Discord, to have just like real time access to a thriving community of like-minded limited individuals. So last week we had the Arena Open. Next week we have a Mythic Championship qualifier, right? Maybe is it just now a PTQ? I don't know what MCQ, PTQ, I don't know what letters I'm supposed to be
the
using.
The nomenclature is.
Yeah, I don't know what it is now. It's been changing, but there is going to be a blank blank Q next weekend, and that's limited. I qualified for that yesterday via some play-in points. Love that play-in point system on Arena. So we've got that. Then the following weekend, there's another limited Arena Open, and this time it's Cube Draft on both day one and day two, which we're super excited about. I think we're going to chat about that briefly next week, but we've got something sweet planned for our 300th episode next week as well. So that's just all to talk about. There's a ton of high stakes limited events happening on Arena right now. That's not even taking into account all the qualification events on MTGO that you can get into that are sealed. There's just a ton of things to be doing. And for all of those, it's just great to be able to have access to the community and the Discord.
But Magic is dying, Ethan. Haven't you heard?
Oh, that's true.
Rip, we should probably Magic. Just call the podcast.
Call it. Yeah, we had a good run. And of course, there's just a lot of other great things as you move up the reward tiers over at the Patreon page. You get access to the episode a day in advance, get access to our show notes, get access to a private section of the Discord, etc. So if the show is of value to you, and if that community, if you're looking for a community, the Discord is there for you. So head on over to the Patreon page if that's of interest to you. And of course, we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week, we're welcoming Anders, Mitchell, Hunter, PH, and Mark. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. Show is also brought to you by TCG Player, best place to go for anything and everything you need on the internet that is Magic related. The big pull for TCG Player right now is a subscription service for $6.99 a month, and you get a ton of things with that subscription. You get free shipping and tracking, so if you're going to order anything on TCG Player, you basically should just be subscribing to them because shipping and handling is probably more expensive, if not that amount exactly expensive. You get extra bonus bucks, which is store credit on purchases you make. And most importantly, you get access to CFB Pro articles, which you, Alex, and I are adding to each and every week, as well as a bunch of other pros. We're putting out content about Brothers War Limited. Maybe there'll be some content about the Arena Cube leading up to the Arena Cube Open. Who knows? I am stoked about that Arena Cube Open, speaking of.
Yeah.
And for anything you need from TCG Player, if you're getting some sealed product or what have you, maybe Christmas gifts for folks, it is that time of year. If you would please use our affiliate link for anything that you plan to purchase on their website to let them know that we sent you over there. There's a couple different ways to get to our affiliate link. You can either go to lordsoflimited.com/TCG Player, and that will redirect you to their website. Or you can just go to our website, lordsoflimited.com. Click on support, and then click on the TCG Player link that you find there.
A few other things I want to shout out. We got a ton of YouTube content that I think is worth mentioning out there in the open. First is that three of the six perspectives from the team draft are up on YouTube. Myself, Quarter Calls, and LSV. LSV's is on the CFB YouTube channel. Alex's is on his Limited Level Ups YouTube channel. And mine is on our Lords of Limited YouTube channel, which is basically defunct, but a place to drop those videos. You know, when we have them. Speaking of the CFB YouTube channel, I have an incredibly awesome draft up there. You're going to get some content. I think it's like 2.5 hours long is the video. It's
really that is absurd.
Really sweet best of three run with a Teferi, you know, self-mill loop your library kind of deck. You know, one of my faves. And I also have an Arena Open sealed day one deck up on the MTG Arena YouTube channel. So if you're qualifying next week for the ABCDEFQ or whatever it is, and you are like, oh, I'm what do I want to do with Brothers War Sealed? Well, maybe you check out that sealed video and see what's up. So yeah, a lot of awesome stuff happening in the YouTube verse.
Hashtag content, baby.
I would love to just chat about the format in general. You know, we're still kind of early days, as weird as that is. We're still kind of early days in Brothers War. So we're doing this team draft debrief, deep dive. But I'd love to just chat about my experiences over the past, you know, week or so with this format real quick, because I'm having a bit of a love affair with this set.
I am not. This format's fine for me.
Yeah, I know. You hate fun, so it's tough for you. But I think this format is just about everything I love about Limited Magic. I think the strategies are fueled by commons, but there are tons of build around rares. The colorless aspect of everything lets you hashtag delay the decision, which I like. Your graveyard is a resource, right? Unearth, we've talked about since basically week one as being such a huge player in the format. Obviously, that secret is out, I think. I think it checks like just about every box for me.
Yeah, I think the thing that is constricting about the format to me is I like optimizing so much that it's difficult for me to go into other strategies without just trying to do nonsense. Like, I think you toe the line better of like not doing like aggro or not doing super board affecting things while still being very competitive about it. And mine is pretty binary, where either I'm trying to do the best strategy in the format or I'm just totally off the rails. Yes. Like, I don't have the middle ground that you do, where I'm not doing the absolute tier one strategy, but still trying very hard to compete. I think that is a rub for me.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll do quite like a build around and find out kind of episode. I'm trying to figure out, you know, what we're going to be doing in the coming weeks in terms of how to best mine Brothers War for content, because I'm not worried that we have enough to talk about and just, you know, want to make sure that we use our time wisely and use the episodes as best we can to help our listeners. I think help our listeners win number one is the goal, and then also show them maybe some hidden gems. Because I think, honestly, a lot of the power, a lot of the niche stuff that I found is from finding interactions with lower rarity stuff like commons or uncommons. I did finally, you will be happy to hear, Ben, I did finally build a deck with Meticulous Excavation.
Oh, I saw this picture and it is sweet. That is on my to-do list. I mean, for example, like right now, speaking of the, you know, optimizing or nonsense, both the decks I have waiting for me in Best of One and Best of Three are Aether Flux Reservoir Stews. We'll see. I think one of them is very good and the other I think is very bad.
I did have a chance to draft Aether Flux Reservoir and it was not a good deck. I did get 250 someone with it though. But largely, like, I could have won in any number of ways because I had Urza on the battlefield. So I was winning by copying Reservoir a bunch and then just like casting a spell per turn to gain like six life or whatever. So, you know, Urza could have won me in the game in any variety. But I want to talk about this excavation deck because I want to shout out to Raph Levy here for inspiring me. So I saw a tweet from him that he trophied with this beauty. Meticulous Excavation is secretly the best uncommon of the set, is what he said. And so I was looking at this deck. So Meticulous Excavation, for folks who don't know, is the white enchantment, single white, and then it has an activated ability for two and a white, return target permanent you control to its owner's hand, activate only during your turn. So not at sorcery speed, but only during your turn. And then it has this text about like, if it has on earth, then you exile it first and then put it into your hand. And that's just sort of to let you do the thing where you unearth the creature and then you can return it to your hand. It won't go to exile. And, you know, Ben shouted this out as maybe this will be sweet or whatever. You can use power stones for it. Thought largely it wasn't quite going to get there. But honestly, like looking at this deck with Raph, you know, he's got two copies of Lauren, Disciple of History. That's the Gravedigger legendary uncommon that gets back artifacts. He's got Self-Assembler and full Tron, two Mine Workers, two Tower Workers, and Power Plant Worker. We're going to talk about Tron in a second and in the team draft. He's got Combat Thresher. That's the 7-mana 3/3 double strike. ETBs, draws a card, and has prototype for two and a white. So I was peeping that, and I was like, okay, this seems kind of real. And then I got just like the nutso-busted version of a Meticulous Excavation deck. And it was real. It wasn't just like a win more card. It was at times a card that won me the game when like nothing else could have.
Yeah, you just have it with ETBs, right? And then you have like a repeated value engine. That's kind of what we've been talking about. Like if you can get to the point in the game where you can stall the board out or you can stop your opponent's aggression, whoever has the best engine wins, and Excavation's a pretty good engine.
I put Arms Race in a deck. That's the bad sneak attack. And it was good. I had it with Portal to Phyrexia, the 9-mana mythic that like when it comes into play, they sack three creatures. And then in your upkeep, you get to return a creature from a graveyard to the battlefield under your control. And so if you do that, you can time it with Arms Race. You do it in their end step. They sack three things and then you get the upkeep trigger before you have to sack it on your end step. So you don't get, it's not just a like, you know, brief edict, but like that can be your deck's game plan if you have a way to like tutor it up. Pretty sweet. You can like build a sort of like red black. You know, if you think of like red black sneak and reanimate, like reanimate sneak from cube, you can kind of do the same thing where like Disciples of Gix puts it in your graveyard, then you can recur it, then you can cheat it out. You can also get, I had Lauren in that deck, the uncommon Gravedigger to get it back. Like, so it wasn't full meme, I would say. I think it was between meme and dream.
That deck sounded like it needed a copy of Meticulous Excavation just to put that back in your hand and then pop it back out again, you know?
Yes, please. Yes, please. I mean, speaking of, I really do. I saw a tweet of this a couple weeks ago. It was a deck that was like red, white reanimator. It had three of Repair and Recharge. That's the white uncommon that reanimates an artifact, enchantment, or planeswalker and makes a power stone. And then had a bunch of like mutts and bitter reunions to churn through your deck and put stuff in your yard. And I was like, oh, I want to really want to try and get that. It's hard to get those pieces because the repair and recharge is an uncommon. And then you need expensive artifacts worth reanimating, like that basically need to be rares or mythics. There's not quite enough like Combat Threshers there sort of, but not quite enough from the uncommons to get you there. And I have also, I put Liquid Metal Coating in a deck the other day.
That card is not good. We cannot advise putting that card
in
your deck.
I blew up someone's land on turn three on the play with Liquid Metal Coating on turn two, and then what's it called? Race to the Ground on turn three?
I mean,
Stone Rain draw card? Can I not interest you?
I mean, it's exciting, but if you're talking about giving people actionable advice to win in the format, it's not put Liquid Metal Coating plus Race to the Ground in your deck.
I tweeted that screenshot because that deck trophied, but largely because it had like to third path iconoclasts and rare Urza as well.
There it is. There it is.
And someone, and I was like, oh, I stone rage someone on turn three. And then someone responded. They were like, does liquid metal coating do literally anything else in this deck? And I was like, it can protect Urza. Because like they go and if they go and target Urza, then you can make Urza an artifact, then it can copy itself. And then you choose to just keep the copy and kill the one that they targeted.
That's pretty spicy.
Pretty spicy, see? So maybe some uses, but yeah, it's not great. And maybe a little tease here. How between Meme and Dream, where are you putting Fultron? Where are you putting Mine Worker, Assembly Worker, and Power Plant Worker?
Like on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being Meme, 10 being Dream?
Yeah.
It's like a 2, like almost a full Meme. It's not good.
What if Self-Assembler is there?
Still like 2.5. It's not good.
Oh, okay. Wow. This is why we can't have nice things, Ben. trying to get you excited about something, trying to tee you up to talk about Tron and the team draft, and he's just a real downer. Yeah. All right. So those are just some highlights of my week, and we'll figure out how to bring you as Ben said, the best actionable advice in the coming weeks about the format, with some slight childlike wonder from me.
I have veto powers. Don't worry, listeners.
He is the executive branch of the podcast. Before we take a quick little break here, do you want to describe the rules of Team Draft real quick for our listeners who maybe are tuning into one of these for the first time?
Yeah, for sure. Team Drafts are pods of 6 people instead of the normal 8. So you sit down, 6 people, 3 on each team, and you alternate players from each team. So like Team A and Team B, you would be seated A, B, A, B, A, B around the table. And you open your first pack, you pass. Same as normal draft, but then at the end of the draft, each team gets together and like talks about their decks, what they passed, and you're trying to figure out cards that the other team might have, what types of decks they might have, so you can almost sort of pre-sideboard ahead of your matches with the other team. Like if you've got a Plummet and you expect them to have had all the flyers in the draft, like that sort of stuff you're trying to figure out. And then you play best of 3 matches, same as normal. First to 5 match wins the team draft. So you play best of 9 matches. And everybody plays everybody from every other team. First team to 5 match wins the draft.
Sweet. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with Marshall's draft. This holiday season, the best deal in wireless can only be found at Mint Mobile.
Right now, when you switch to Mint Mobile and buy any 3-month plan, you'll get another 3 months for free.
As the first company to sell premium wireless service online only, Mint Mobile lets you order and activate from home with eSIM while saving tons on phone plans starting at just $15 a month.
They make it super easy to change plans. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and switch easily with eSIM.
And if you need a new device, Mint Mobile has you covered too. For a limited time, get 6 months of free service when you buy a select device and plan.
All plans come with unlimited talk and text plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. What more could you want?
For a limited time, buy any 3-month Mint Mobile plan and get 3 more months free by going to mintmobile.com/LOL.
That's mintmobile.com/LOL. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/LOL.
And now, back to the show. All right, so the order of folks at the table is Marshall passing to Ben, passing to BK, to Alex, passing to LSV, passing to me.
All right, so we're going to take a look at Marshall's draft first. So imagine yourself as the host of Limited Resources, and you are taking a seat for the Team Resources team draft. Pack 1, pick 1. You see the following cards as options. There's Overwhelming Remorse, 4 and a black for an instant, costs 1 less to cast for each creature card in your graveyard, exile, target creature, or planeswalker. There's no other real commons in consideration. Moving onto the uncommons, there's no real uncommons in consideration. we have a classic Brothers War pack here with a caveman pick. And then there's 2 rares, which are not in consideration. There's Stasis Coffin, which is nonsense, and Chromatic Lantern, which could do some things. 3 mana artifact gives lands you control tap, add 1 mana of any color, and then it itself can tap to add 1 mana of any color.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty classic Brothers War caveman pick and Overwhelming Remorse. There's even kind of a picture of a cave in that art. So I think that's pretty fitting here for our first pick here. But I did want to ask you if you had any, we don't do a sort of like team meeting anymore, usually. You, me, and Alex don't sit down and sort of hash out like what we want to do, if were there any changes between regular draft and team draft. And I went back and watched the other team's draft, and this was one of the questions that LSV got, like, are any considerations for team draft? And he was like, the days of hook and cutting are sort of over, because you can't really do that with how good the commons are in most formats these days. Did you have any thoughts yourself going into this of slight tweaks you were making in your head for team draft versus regular draft?
Yeah, I thought colorless cards were going to be pretty important. I mean, I'm assuming we all did. Like, the colorless cards let you be very flexible. So I think those are at an absolute premium in team draft. The good colorless cards, that is, right? Like, not Power Plant Worker. I'm looking at that in Marshall's pack one, pick one here. Also,
right.
The 5-mana 4/4 that you can pay 3 to give +2/+2.
Well, and sort of pseudo colorless cards in the sense of the good unearthed creatures as well, like Scrapwork Cohort, Scrapwork Mutt, even Rager, stuff like that.
Right. Like, those, I think, all go up a notch from regular draft. And then I also think random 2-for-1s go up a ton in team draft. So I was like really worried about Moment of Defiances running around, because that's just such a blowout in team draft if somebody sticks that combat trick and gets to draw a card. So things like that go up a little bit for me. And then just being aware of creatures. Like, I think making a conscious effort to value low drops, because if you get them, that means the other team doesn't get them.
Right.
And the format really rewards you playing to the board.
Yep, I agree completely. I had a lot of those similar thoughts as well. Okay, so Overwhelming Remorse in Marshall's pile here. Moving on to pack one, pick two. What does he see?
Pack one, pick two. Another fairly boring pack. In the commons, there is Excavation Explosion. 2 and a red, deal 3 to any target, make a tapped Power Stone. I think that's the only common in consideration. The other black commons to pair with Overwhelming Remorse are Carrion Locust, 2 and a black for a 2/1 flyer, and when it ETBs, you can exile target card from an opponent's graveyard. If it was a creature card, that player loses a life. And there's also a Ravenous Gigamole, the self-mill 2/3 that if you hit a creature when you mill, you can put it in your hand. If you don't, you put a +1/+1 counter on Ravenous Gigamole. And then in the uncommons, there's a couple cards in consideration. There's a Soul Guide Lantern, 1 for the artifact. When ETBs, exile target card from a graveyard. Tap, sack it to exile each opponent's graveyard, or you can pay 1 and sacrifice it to draw a card. And then there's also a Bushwhack, green for the sorcery, search your library for basic land, or have target creature you control fight target creature you don't control.
Yeah, I think basically boils down to the two removal spells for me in Bushwhack and Explosion. And I think, yeah, Explosion is just a better card. Rectangles rule the world in this format for me. You know, this kills a thing and makes a Power Stone. That's pretty dang good. And is in a better color. I think red is better than green.
Right. And sets Marshall up to potentially draft red-black, which is the best deck in the format. Although you got to assume in a team draft like this that
right.
is going to be difficult to get a good red-black deck.
I agree.
So yeah, I agree. Marshall takes Excavation Explosion. I would have as well. And I think mostly just trying to give the context of the pack there with those other cards. So we've got an Overwhelming Remorse and an Excavation Explosion heading into pack one, pick three. See the following cards as options. There is a Moment of Defiance, 2 and a black for an instant. Target creature gets +2/+1 and gets lifelink until end of turn. You draw a card. There's Mightstone's Animation, as I think the best common in the pack. 3 blue, enchant artifact. When ETBs, you draw a card. Enchanted artifact's a creature with base power and toughness 4/4 in addition to its other types. And then moving on to the uncommons, there is an Obstinate Baloth here. 2 black-black for a 4/4. When ETBs, you gain 4 life. If a spell or ability an opponent controls causes you to discard Obstinate Baloth, put it onto the battlefield instead of putting it into your graveyard.
That's interesting. You called out Mightstone's Animation as the best common in the pack. No love for Argothian Sprite these days?
No, I like Argothian Sprite. Yeah, okay, I lied. Mightstone's Animation is not the best common in the pack. I like Sprite more than I do Mightstone's Animation.
I don't think it's quite cut and dry. So Sprite is the 2-mana 2/2, can't be blocked by artifact creatures, and you can pay 7 to dump 2+1/+1 counters on it. I don't think it's quite clear cut because, you know, Sprite is a 2-drop, which is premium, and has pseudo-evasion, is a late-game mana sink. Those are all things to like about it. But Mightstone's Animation is a 2-for-1, quite powerful, and gives you power at common, gives you a game plan at common, and is one of the ways to utilize blue in its best form at common. So I don't know if it's as clear-cut as that. I wasn't setting you up for failure as much as you might think.
No, here's what happened. I do like Sprite better than Mightstone's Animation, like, regardless of other people's opinions or your opinion. Sprite is ahead of Animation in my pick order. I really like green in this format, but the Baloth was in the pack, so I'm never taking Sprite over Baloth. So I had just discounted it visually, which is why I ended up on Mightstone's Animation as the best common.
And I think, again, we've got now sort of basically 3-for-3 picks that feel cavemanish to me, of taking Remorse into Excavation Explosion into Obstinate Baloth, of like, just take the best card out of each pack here.
Yep, Marshall agrees and takes the Baloth. Moving on to pack one, pick four, see the following cards as options. In the commons, now there's a Might Stones animation that is officially the best common in the pack.
Officially.
And then moving on to the uncommons, there are two that are kind of interesting. There's Audacity for a green. You can enchant creature, give it +2/+0 and trample. And when Audacity is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you draw a card. There's also Corrupt. 5 and a black sorcery deals damage to any target equal to the number of swamps you control. You gain life equal to the damage dealt this way.
So Corrupt is a card that, again, I feel like needs to be slotted on the meme to dream scale in regular draft, honestly, because I have drafted mono black once, and unfortunately, I don't think I got any Corrupts. Mono color decks, I think, are few and far between, but they do exist. I've drafted a mono black, a mono white, and a mono red deck. The mono white and red decks, I think, you know, splashed a little bit for some unearth costs or whatever, but you know, we're mostly monocolored at heart. But those are rare. You know, I've done, I don't know how many drafts I've done so far and only been monocolored in three of them. And I think in team drafts, it's going to become increasingly difficult to take advantage of Corrupt in that sense, to take advantage of it in a monocolored sense. And I bring it up because this is the first of many Corrupts that are opened in this team draft. What are your thoughts? When you were seeing this card, I was like, I didn't really give any weight to it. And I think you and I had maybe similar feelings about it, but we're in the minority, it seemed, in terms of team resources and Alex taking them a little higher.
Yeah, I don't like this card in regular draft much. Like, I would give it a 5 on the meme to dream scale. Like, you could maybe do the thing, but it's pretty unlikely, I think. And this really needs to be doing like 4 to 5 damage before you're happy right. with it, I think. And in team draft, I was just thinking like, there is no way anybody is getting near a mono black deck for this to actually be a premium card. Like, maybe you're including it and hoping it does 3 damage, but I don't think you're happy about it per se.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'd be scared of like how many concessions you might have to make in future picks. Like, how restrictive is this card, even if we think it's a little higher on the meme to dream scale? To make that dream a reality, you need to make some concessions in the draft, for sure, in a regular draft. And in a team draft, I would not want to put that kind of restraint on my picks in the future of the packs.
Yeah, for sure. I think if I were Marshall here, pack 1, pick 4, I think I would have landed on Might Stones animation as just like continuing to take the best card out of every pack, or what I think is the best card out of every pack, and just feeling out where the draft is going to go, because you don't have a clear direction yet to like pair up a card of any color, really. Like, yes, Corrupt goes with Overwhelming Remorse, but like, if you end up black red, are you really happy with 3 removal spells at the start, with one of them being super clunky? Like, I think one of the problems black red can have is too many removal spells,
yes,
and not enough, you know, action or playing to the board, and then you kind of get in this weird spot. So I think I would just take Might Stones animation here, but possible that team resources values Corrupt much higher than we do, which would explain Marshall's pick here.
And I think probably also thinks like we do that blue is the weakest color of the 5 now. I think that has settled to be the case for everybody.
Yes, I would completely agree that blue is the weakest of the 5, but we just passed a Might Stones animation.
Yes.
Who knows? Could table. And then like, also in a team draft, like, would be nervous about passing back-to-back Might Stones animation. I think that's another reason to take the second Might Stones animation here. Like, Marshall's passing to me. If I take that first Might Stones animation and that second Might Stones animation, like, somebody's got to draft blue. And if you're the only blue drafter, like, there is some value in doing that for your team. Like, getting all the blue cards on the wheel, playing blue, and then like cherry picking some of the good cards from the other team.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
All right, so Marshall ended up on Corrupt, pack 1, pick 4. Moving on to pack 1, pick 5, see the following cards as options. So there's Stern Lesson in the pack, 2 and a blue instant, draw 2 cards and discard a card, create a tapped Power Stone token. There's Sibling Rivalry, 3 and a red, sorcery, gain control of target artifact or creature until end of turn, untap it, it gains haste, and you make a tapped Power Stone token. There's Evolving Wilds, and like a smattering of other reasonable cards. There's like a Ravenous Gigamole, there's a Monastery Swift Spear, there's a Clay Revenant, maybe for somebody to be doing some sort of engine thing with. There's Recommission. That card has gone way up for me lately in white decks. I've liked Recommission quite a bit. But yeah, there's a lot of reasonable options here.
I think especially with Marshall start with 2 strong removal spells in Explosion and Remorse, and perhaps this inkling of wanting to go heavy black with Corrupt. If he does lean a heavy black life and then wants to splash some things or have, you know, his second color be a light second color, I think Evolving Wilds is going to do a lot of work there. So that's what I would land on here.
Yeah, I also would take Evolving Wilds in this spot. You figure you're going to want to splash cards in team draft. I think even more so in regular draft. And Evolving Wilds is already premium in regular draft. Not to mention, like, if Marshall is black-red, gets Goblin Blast Runners, there's some great synergy there. Mm. So I like Evolving Wilds. Marshall landed on Sibling Rivalry. I think hoping to, you know, maybe cut black-red or lock into black-red. And I think probably a nod to liking the Steal and Sacrifice version of that deck.
Well, and even if we disagree with the pick of Sibling Rivalry here, he's going to be happy with what he gets in pick six.
Yeah, pick six, he picks up a Killzone Acrobat. So has got to be feeling great about taking that Sibling Rivalry there and then getting a Killzone Acrobat here. I will say, if I'm Marshall, I am pretty nervous about passing animation Stern Lesson. Like,
yep,
all in a row. Like, that would very much be on my radar. And if I'm Marshall, I would be assuming that me, Ben, who he's passing to, is potentially like moving into blue underneath me.
Yeah. And so then what would you be doing in that sense? So you would expect, I guess, as pack two rolls around to be cut from blue. And then in pack three, are you looking to just be like, I can't pass anything else good that's blue?
Yeah, I think I would be worried about passing future Might Stones animations, etc.
Yeah, maybe even the like cantripping uncommon artifacts, whatever, those kind of Elsewhere Flask, that kind of thing.
Right. So Marshall's pack one ends out pretty boring. Like, pack one was very underpowered, I think, past the first few picks for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. So pack one, pick seven, grabs a Blanchwood Prowler, one and a green, 1/1, just as the best card in the pack. There's no red or black in this pack at all, really, for Marshall. Pick eight, grabs a Conscripted Infantry, which is fine in a red-black deck. That's the 2 and a red 3/1 that when it dies, you get a 1/1 colorless soldier artifact creature token. Pick nine gets a Moment of Defiance. I think that's a nice pickup for a team draft. 2 black instant. Target creature gets +1/+1 and gains lifelink until end of turn. Draw a card. And then pick 10 gets a Sibling Rivalry. 3 and a red sorcery. Gain control of target artifact or creature until end of turn. Untap it, it gains haste, and make a tapped Power Stone token. That's the second active treason effect. So Marshall is essentially now like locked into black-red at the end of pack one. But
yeah,
like, the thing that would be on my radar if I'm Marshall is my black and red cards are all spells. Like, you've got Overwhelming Remorse, you've got Excavation Explosion, you've got these two Sibling Rivalries, and you've got Corrupt, and you have no real good creatures and no early drops, which is, I think, something to be very concerned about in this format.
Right. And if we jump ahead, and we'll have a link where you can check out the draft logs and all the final deck picks with sealeddeck.tech links. If we jump ahead and look at his final build, he does end up in a heavy black, light splash red for those two rivalries and Excavation Explosion. 2 corrupts at the top of the curve. You know, he gets a second copy of that. But your concern is right, Ben. I mean, his creature count is only 13, and he only has 3 2-drops, 2 Thraxodemons and a Gixxion Infiltrator. Those are his only ways to affect the board before turn 3.
Yeah, I'm impressed looking at this deck with the 2 corrupts. He kind of did the thing. I mean, they're like fine-ish cards for him, but like with the 2 Overwhelming Remorses, the 2 corrupts are just, that's all kind of in the same area. Like, I think Marshall would trade these 2 corrupts for 2 disfigures in a heartbeat, right?
Well, or just 2 2-drops.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Not that he had the option for that. I'm not sure. Did we even see any mutts in the draft? Rip those good little looters. But yeah, I think that's what I think. He would trade these for some cheap plays because he's got, you know, quite a few 3s. And then even his 5-drop slot is a little high. And also the double Overwhelming Remorse is nice, but the creature count of 13 is not so nice with those, right? Those are going to be 4 mana a lot of the time. You know, one of the power of the Remorses is have it in a high creature count deck, have it in a deck with some self-mill or whatever so that you can get that cost down.
Right, for sure.
All right, let's take one more break and then we'll be back with the rest of the drafts.
Today's podcast is brought to you by HelloFresh.
With HelloFresh, you get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep.
Skip those trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit.
Tis the season, even though Ben and I are Grinches, tis the season for saving money wherever we can. HelloFresh is just as convenient as takeout, but 25% less expensive. So you can use those savings for holiday gifts or to treat yourself. yourself.
And HelloFresh has more than just meals with HelloFresh Market. From quick breakfast to charcuterie boards and desserts, it's never been easier to prep for a party or fill your pantry.
I was just, before we recorded the show this morning, just planning out what my wife and I were going to eat this week. And I keep coming back to this delicious HelloFresh recipe I made with chicken in this like sumac and apricot glaze with some roasted veggies and quinoa. Actually, it was bulgur, but I can't find bulgur at the grocery store, so been doing quinoa. Checks all the boxes I want. It's healthy, delicious, quick, and easy to prepare for a weeknight.
Go to HelloFresh.com/LOL18 and use code LOL18 for 18 free meals plus free shipping.
That's HelloFresh.com/LOL18 for you to see why HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit.
And now, back to the show.
All right, Ben, I'm going to take you through your draft here. I'm excited. I haven't yet really looked at this draft because I trust you wholeheartedly, and I'm excited to see what you ended up doing here. So pack one, pick one. Again, you said these packs were kind of weak in the first go round, and they definitely seem that way as we're looking through. So pack one, pick one. Best common in the pack is Disfigure, single black, instant target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. If you look at the uncommons, there's a Hero of the Dunes, 3WB for the 3/2. When it enters the battlefield, you can return target artifact or creature card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, and creatures you control with mana value 3 or less get +1/+0. There's a Corrupt in the pack, and your rares are Underground River and Door to Nothingness. So I think it comes down to Hero versus Disfigure here.
Yeah, my opening pack, I looked at the rares and I was like, uh-oh, fasten your seatbelts, folks. We're going to get stomped by Team LR opening busted rares and us opening nothing again. But between Disfigure and Hero, I landed on Disfigure as I think a cheaper and more flexible card. Hero of the Dunes is certainly more powerful, I think, but a lot more constricting as well. So wanted to leave myself the maximum options and took Disfigure and was putting BK on likely taking Hero of the Dunes, who I was passing to.
Right. And which is not a bad spot for you to be in, given that Disfigure is black. Maybe you get him into white black a little bit or wanting to splash that, but you're getting into black under him. So not the worst spot to be in for sure. Pack one, pick two. This is Marshall's first pack where he got to take Overwhelming Remorse over basically nothing. And you now see that nothing. You get a Blanchwood Prowler at common, 1/1 green, 1/1. When it enters the battlefield, you mill 3. You can put a land from among them into your hand. If you don't, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. There's a Moment of Defiance to follow up your Disfigure. In the uncommons, there's a Transmogrant Altar to maybe follow up Disfigure with. 3-mana artifact, pay black, tap, sack a creature, add triple colorless, or pay 2, tap, sack a creature, create a 3/3 colorless zombie artifact creature token at sorcery speed.
Yeah, for me, this was between Altar and Chromatic Lantern, the rare.
I took
the Altar thinking that like maybe I'll get into black-red sacrifice, not really thinking that, but also Altar, I think, is just a pretty flexible card. If you get a Revenant, that's a way to like build an engine in a team draft that could be super helpful, so fairly blank pack here and took a flyer on the Altar without putting much weight on it at all.
Chromatic Lantern like appeals to me, but I'm so nervous about the 3-mana non-board impacting cards than I am about the 1 or the 2-mana. Like the cantripping ones or whatever, like Soulguide Lantern, Chromatic Star, Elsewhere Flask, Energy Refractor. Once you get to turn 3, it feels hard. And especially a card like Chromatic Lantern that you can in theory be like, oh, I'm, you know, building around it or whatever. It's going to open up my mana. But then do you build a deck that fails if you don't see the lantern? It's a card that like it just makes me nervous looking at it, you know?
Chat was egging me on to take Chromatic Lantern and wheel Door to Nothingness. I wasn't having it.
Wow. that's a real Ethan move right there. All right, pack one, pick three. This was the pack where Marshall took Excavation Explosion. There is that Bushwhack remaining in the pack, as well as a Soulguide Lantern as a cheap cantripping artifact with some graveyard hate. And I would say no real commons in consideration over those.
Yeah, I took the Bushwhack here as I think a clear best card in the pack. And again, the packs are dead enough that I don't really care what BK is taking out of either of these last two packs. Like, I know BK likely has Hero of the Dunes, and then I have no idea out of the last two packs what he has done.
Right.
Because I have taken the last remaining reasonable card out of the packs.
Right. And he's likely taking Soulguide Lantern out of this pack, but that doesn't really matter to you, right?
Right, yes.
Or give you any information about what he might be getting into. That's just, you know, that's going in any deck.
For sure.
Pack one, pick four. Here we have the two commons in consideration of Mightstone's animation and the Argothian sprite where Marshall took Obstinate Baeloth.
Yeah, I think for me, having just taken the Bushwhack, I talked about how much I like Argothian sprite. I do have sprite ahead of animation in my pick order, and I back that up here. I take the sprite over the animation, and also am clocking a Warlord's Elite that is in this pack. Two and a white for the 4/4. As an additional cost to cast it, you tap two untapped artifact creatures or lands. Because I do think that BK has that Hero of the Dunes. So I'm just noting good white or black that I'm passing. And I think Warlord's Elite is the first, like, quote unquote, potentially good white card that BK could be taking to follow up his Hero of the Dunes.
Yeah, that's really smart. And you're clocking the animation being passed there as well. As we see, pack one, pick five. This is the pack where we saw the animation along with three other, you know, I would say medium blue commons, but it's worth noting that there's still pack one, pick five, four blue commons in the pack with Scatter Ray, the counterspell, Phalagi Archaeologist, that's the self-mill creature, and Third Path Savant, the 3-mana 2/3 that can draw two cards for 7 mana, plus the Might Zones animation, which you, I think, correctly grab here, which is interesting, taking it over the Audacity, which is, I think, just fine, and especially bumps up with you having Bushwhack and Argothian Sprite in your pile.
Yeah, I just was really nervous about passing two Mightstones animations in a row. I thought there was a chance that BK would have taken the Mightstones animation pack one, pick four. And I was a little less worried about Warlord's Elite because I hadn't passed any cheap white cards. So I knew, like, yes, there's a chance BK took Warlord's Elite into Warlord's Elite here, but as long as I don't pass a lot of good cheap white cards, we should be okay in that respect as well. So I was a little more worried about the animation than the elite here. And I also thought the animation was a card that I potentially was going to, like, move into and play. Whereas the elite, I just would have been maybe cutting from BK, like, very unlikely for me to move into a Warlord's Elite deck, given the start I've had, but very possible for me to start drafting blue if I think blue is open.
I'm really happy that these were your decisions to make and not mine, because I think I would have not clocked the animation from the last pack into the animation this pack, and I think I would have taken Audacity as my a green follow-up to Bushwhack and Sprite and start to get into that life. But I'm really happy that you took animation and that you were clocking the Warlord's Elites as well.
It's all part of the job, baby.
I know. Moving on to pack one, pick six. This is the pack where you have that Evolving Wilds, I guess also a recommission to note here. I mean, you are shipping. There's a world where BK has Hero of the Dunes, Soul Guide Lantern, two Warlords Elite, and now you're shipping him a recommission. It's not crazy.
It's not crazy, but again, we've seen no one or two drop white cards, which is where like the bread and butter really is with the Warlords Elite. For that to be good, you need to go one drop, two drop Warlords Elite.
Lantern helps out that in some respect.
I guess. Yeah. I wasn't clocking that as a wonder. I was thinking creatures. But yes, for sure. Lantern helps that a lot. I took the Evolving Wilds here as we thought Marshall, you know, potentially could have taken for similar reasons. I don't know what I'm doing. I love Evolving Wilds in this format. I figure there's a high chance I will splash something at the end of the draft. And again, I am clocking Stern Lesson, so I'm now aware I've passed animation and Stern Lesson BK's direction as well.
Anything of note on the wheel here for you? I would say pick eight and pick nine are for sure in terms of what happens in the future of your draft.
Yeah. So pick seven, get a Hoarding Recluse out of a very weak pack. Picks eight and nine, I pick up Power Plant Workers. I had been noticing that there were some Tron pieces floating around and thought that might be something that I could do. I've also been fairly impressed by just Power Plant Worker as a card on the battlefield from my opponents at times. Yeah, certainly in blue-green decks, which I thought, okay, maybe I'm going to be blue-green. I hadn't seen any black since that disfigure. And so I do think as far as homes for Power Plant Worker, blue-green, I think, is its best home. So got that. And then pick 11, picked up a Third Path Savant. Pick 12, got a sideboard Shoot Down. That's the Exile, Artifact, Enchantment, or Flying. And then nothing particularly noteworthy. And then at the start of pack two, I had, I think, one of the more interesting spots in the whole team draft. So pack two, pick one, I opened the Might Stone and the Weak Stone, which is great. 5-mana rare. You can tap to add 2 colorless mana to your mana pool that can't be spent to cast non-artifact spells. And then you have the choice of drawing 2 or giving something -5/-5. Great rare to open. And then I'm passing a Yoshin Dissident, which is just Worth noting, I think, is a good card that I'm shipping. I'm fairly confident that Marshall is red and not green, like based on the late green that I saw in pack one and seeing no red. I also saw no black after my disfigure. So my gut tells me that Marshall is red-black, but I don't know that for sure. And then you never really know for sure in team draft. That's the problem.
Right.
You're just kind of like hoping, making educated guesses. Pack two, pick two, I have an interesting choice. There is nothing really for me here. There's a Deathbloom Ritualist that I potentially could play. It's 3 black-green for a 3/5. You can tap to add X mana of any one color, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard. Like, I have the option to move into green-black and put that card in my deck. As far as commons go, there's an Excavation Explosion, 2 and a red for a sorcery, deals 3 damage to any target, make a tapped Power Stone token. And then uncommon-wise, I'm thrilled to see that there is a Recruitment Officer still here, which is the white 2/1, 3 and a white. Look at the top 4 of your library. You can reveal a card, mana value 3 or less from among them, and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. That tells me that BK is likely not doing the white thing with the 4/4s, the Warlord's Elite. So I was very happy to note that there. And I think I decided to take Excavation Explosion here because I was pretty sure that Marshall was red and I didn't want to pass Marshall the Excavation Explosion. And I thought there was a chance that I could move into red underneath Marshall because I essentially am not committed to any colors yet. Like, I just had no good cards in pack one. So I am up for doing business with any color that provides me with good cards at this point. And Excavation Explosion is one of the better cards I've seen all draft.
Well, and it gives you a great opening to get into red here as you take Pendragon Strongbowl, pick 3. And then I don't know how this made it to you, pack 2, pick 4, Visions of Phyrexia. It's a 2 red-red enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, you exile the top card of your library. You can play that card this turn. And at the beginning of your end step, if you didn't play a card from exile this turn, you get a tapped Power Stone token. Super powerful, but also an incredible engine with Strongbowl.
Yes, very thrilled to see that with Strongbowl. And very happy that I moved into red here. Really rewarded me. And as we saw, Marshall was red-black, so I did great work for our team. Moving into red here to pat myself on the back. And then pack 2, pick 4, there's a second Yoshin Dissident here. And like, again, I'm pretty confident that Marshall is not green. So I think Marshall can't use these. And I'm hoping that they make their way to you and that you can either use them or that if you can't use them, you don't pass 2 Yoshin Dissidents to whoever is sitting next to you. And then pack 2, pick 5, there's a third Yoshin Dissident. At this point, I am just panicking. I'm like, please, please don't let Marshall be in green white somehow, like magically. So I took a Saren Steel Seeker here over the Yoshin Dissident because I could potentially use the Steel Seeker. Also, great engine with Visions of New Phyrexia if I end up in red-green, which I did. And then was just hoping that the Dissident thing worked out for our team.
All right, so you end up in red-green. What does your final deck look like?
My final deck looks fine. I'm very happy with where I ended up. I have some premium red cards. I wheeled an Arbalest Engineers in pack 3, which was excellent for our team. I have a Steel Seraph that I opened in pack 3. That's what I took over the Engineers and then wheeled the Engineers. I also have the Tron pieces, double Mine Worker, 1 Tower Worker, 2 Power Plant Workers. Like, my deck has some very good cards and then some cards that play well in the format. Like, my deck plays to the board. I get on board early. Like, I've got a very good curve. I've got some rares. I feel like my deck is totally serviceable with some good rares.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I definitely from the start of the draft and seeing this deck, it feels like you really made out scot-free a little bit, right? Like, the start of the draft was very much not exciting for you, and I like the look of your deck by the end of it.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's take a look at BK's draft. You know, BK, he ranges, right, from he comes in and this is the first draft he's ever done in the format to he drafted Bro quite a bit, right? Isn't he mythic?
Yeah, I think so. Alex paired up against him in the wild right after the season reset in Platinum. So that would have mean BK was mythic in November.
So he's been drafting up a storm and he's got some spice for us as he often does. You know, we saw Ox Plow in the Kaldheim showdown. We've seen a lot of interesting things from him. We saw like mono zombies somewhere with that zombie copy enchantment from I guess it was Crimson Vow. He's done a lot of sweet stuff in the past, so I'm excited to see what he has in store for us.
So you're BK, pack one, pick one. You sit down, you see the following cards as options in the commons. I think the best common is Evolving Wilds. Moving on to the uncommons, there's a Phylogy Vanguard, the 2 red-white, 2/3 first strike. Whenever it or another creature enters the battlefield under your control, target creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn. And then the rare, there's Mishra, Tamer of Mach Fawa. Three black red for a 4/4 gives everything you control ward, sacrifice a permanent, and each artifact in your graveyard has unearth for one black red.
Yeah, this is interesting. I think like if this were week one, I would take Mishra here, but I've been pretty unimpressed by this. This is often like 5 mana 4/4, and if they want to kill it, sacrificing a land in the late game isn't that big of a deal. Plus, artifacts are going to be taken highly in this team draft. So I think even this even gets a little worse in team draft because people take the colorless cards and the unearthed cards or whatever pretty highly. So I think I might land on the Vanguard here, even though red-white aggro is a deck that is fairly foreign to me.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do here. Take Evolving Wilds? I think I'd like to say that I would take Evolving Wilds, but I think I would end up taking Mishra because I don't have much experience with it and it has been pretty good against me.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. I think it's sort of up in the air between those three, honestly.
Yeah, so BK lands on the Mishra, Tamer of Mokfawa. Pack one, pick two. He does grab that Hero of the Dunes, as we suspected, out of the pack that I passed him. And then moving on to pack one, pick three, has the choice between Blanchwood Prowler, one and a green, 1/1. When ETBs, you mill three. You put a land from among the milled cards in your hand. If you don't, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. That or Chromatic Lantern, pretty much. This is that super weak pack.
Yeah, I mean, he honestly goes on the run, I think, here, 2, 3, 4 of the card, the runner-up cards for us, right? We thought he would take Hero. He did. He takes Chromatic Lantern here, pick three. And then pick four, he takes Soul Guide Lantern out of that nothing pack, right, where you took Bushwhack.
Yeah. And then moving on to pack one, pick five, when we had that choice between Warlord's Elite, the white 4/4, and Mightstone's Animation, he does, in fact, grab that Mightstone's Animation.
Yeah. Okay. So he takes that over the Warlord's Elite, even though he does have the Hero of the Dunes. That's interesting to see. And then even though you took Mightstone's Animation pick six, you've got to be glad you did now looking at this because he takes Phalagi Archaeologist. That's the blue self-mill, 2 mana, 0/3. And if you grab a non-creature, non-land from it, you put it into your hand or you put a +1/+1 counter on it.
Yeah, I think assuming Mightstone's Animation had been there, he almost certainly would have slammed it and would have been thrilled, right?
Yes, I think so.
So he still gets a blue card, but I made his deck slightly worse. And then pick seven has a choice between Phalagi Archaeologist and Stern Lesson.
Yeah, and he takes the second Archaeologist, which I don't know if he was clocking this at the time, but in the pack is No One Left Behind, which is 4 and a black sorcery, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield, costs 3 less to cast if it targets a creature with mana value 3 or less. That card plays incredibly well with Archaeologist, and it does wheel for him. He gets it pick, 13?
Ooh, wow. That is wild.
Yeah. And that, when I saw him do that, this is now on my bucket list. I'm like, I want to draft this blue black. It's hard, again, be like similar to the red white reanimator deck I was talking about. It's hard because, so sure, you can count on getting Phalagi Archaeologists, but you can't count on getting No One Left Behind, and you can't count on getting creatures worth reanimating. Like, I don't think, I mean, I guess you could just do it with like Rest Goliaths, the 10 mana 10-10s, like that could be fine. But what's nice is that like Archaeologist not only bins the creatures, right, because it mills three, but also digs you towards your No One Left Behind. It's a really cute little combo.
Yeah, so I think the only real decisions BK had in pack one here were whether to pursue blue or whether to pursue white, right? Like that pack one, pick five decision between Animation and Warlord's Elite kind of sets the course for the rest of his draft, right? When he takes the Animation, he gets into blue. I think if you take the Elite, you follow it up with Elite, and then he's fighting for white with our team, which remains to be seen whether or not that is better for them. I think ultimately it would have worked out better had BK gone Elite, Elite.
Because he gets to go Elite, Elite, Recommission. And Recommission is very good with two elites.
Yes, absolutely. And then I was also terrified in pack three that BK had gone down the Warlord's Elite path, because in pack three, I passed him back-to-back recruitment officers, which ended up making their way to Alex, which was awesome for our team. And I think would have been disastrous had BK chosen to go down the white route. And again, like hindsight's 20/20. There's no, we're not putting BK down for moving into blue at all. I just think that was the only decision point BK had.
Well, he's got a little bit of a decision point. Pack two, pick one. I think you can sort of see his, I think he may be the Ethan of their team. I think he's got the spice in him and you know, really wants to do the sweet things. And he's often very successful in doing so. But I think pack two, pick one, he takes Amishra's Bauble over Excavation Explosion. I mean, over even, you know, had he gone the white path of, you know, the two Warlords Elite to follow up the Hero of the Dunes, he gets to take Recruitment Officer, which is awesome. But he takes a bobble over Explosion, which I think is a slight misstep in a team draft. And then Pac-2 pick 2 gets a second copy of Hero of the Dunes, which he does take, but doesn't end up pushing down that, you know, pure white black hero, low curve, you know, 3 mana value or less strategy.
Right. And also then enables me, by making those early picks in pack two, enables me to move into red and play these premium red cards. Like, he passes me in a row the Explosion, the Strong Bowl, the Visions. And he also saw no red. So, like, yes, it was actually Marshall on his team and he was doing a good job of trying to float those cards to Marshall, but he doesn't know that I'm not red, you know, and didn't cut red card.
And we saw that he did get a, in pack one, to go along with that reanimation package, he got a Suchi Cave Guard. That's the 8 mana, 8/8 Vigilance Ward 4. And then pack 3, pick 1, he opens up Tyrant of Courages. 4 red, 4/5 flyer. When ETBs, it deals 4 damage to any target. And you can pay a red to give it +1/+0 until end of turn. And I don't know if you saw the reanimation stuff, but I definitely did in my match against him.
Oh, I didn't. I saw the artifact vomit my deck onto the battlefield version of his deck. His deck was sweet.
His deck was sweet. I mean, you can't deny it. So if we look at his deck, he got a pretty awesome Grixis deck. Base blue, a little bit of black for the No One Left Behind. He gets the double. He has double Mishra, Tamer of Mokfawa, the Tyrant of Courages, the Suchi. One with the Multiverse is in his deck. I never saw this. 6 blue-blue enchantment. Look at the top card of your library anytime. You can play lands and cast spells from the top of your library. And once during each of your turns, you can cast a spell from your hand or the top of your library without paying its mana cost.
He definitely ramped that out against me with Inspiring Statuary, and it was terrifying.
Whoa, that's insane. Yeah, I mean, the dude is just like a brewer in these showdowns, and it's so awesome to see. Unfortunately, his deck didn't quite get there in the matches against us, but I think still hats off to him. This is a very sweet brew.
All right, that takes us on to Alex.
All right, Alex's draft, speaking of Tyrant of Courages, that's how his starts. He opens the 4 red, 4/5 flyer. So 2 of these opened at the table. Thankfully, one of them goes into our pile. And this is the first, like, busto rare that's opened in the team draft.
Yeah, glad it's on our team. Go, Alex. Yeah. All the practice paying off.
Yeah, exactly. And then pack 1, pick 2. So we talked about BK having the choice between Mishra, Evolving Wilds, and Falaji Vanguard, the red-white signpost. Well, that's what Alex gets here as a follow-up to the dragon, and that's a pretty sweet pick for him. And this is like Alex's bread and butter. He loves red-white aggro.
Yes, for sure.
So that's a good spot for him to be in. And then pack 1, pick 3, talk to me about the choices here.
So Alex sees the options of, like, a Mine Worker as just a random 2-drop, the 2-mana, 2/1 that can tap to gain a life. There's a Deadly Riposte, 1 and a white for the instant, deals 3 damage to any target tapped creature, and you gain 2 life. And then there's, like, a Corrupt, Chillin' in the Uncommons, 5 and a black, deals damage to any target equal to the number of swamps you control, you gain life equal to the damage dealt this way.
Again, this is the second Corrupt we see. I don't get the love for Corrupt, especially with the powerful start that Alex has. I wonder, was he like thinking about this as a hate draft? I'm not sure.
That's where my head is at. I assume Alex clocked the Corrupt pack 1, pick 1, and didn't want to pass 2 Corrupts. And the pack is largely empty. Like, Mine Worker and Riposte are not exciting cards at all. My guess is that Alex is thinking, I don't want to pass 2 Corrupts, more than he is, oh yeah, I'm going to move in for Corrupt and do the thing, you know?
Okay, because there's a Corrupt in the pack where he took Tyrant of Courages, and now he sees 1, 2 picks later, steals it away from the other team. Great. And that's good, right? Marshall would have gone Corrupt, and then gotten the 3rd one in pack 3, and then maybe he does just go full mono black. I don't know.
Yeah. I think I like the Corrupt pick there from Alex.
Pack 1, pick 4. Again, this is a dud of a pack. We've managed to not mention this card so far, but it's a great one for him to see. He sees Aeronaut Cavalry, 4 and a white, 3/4 human soldier with flying. When it ETBs, you put a +1/+1 counter on another target soldier you control. That's nice for him, having the red-white uncommon.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no other cards that Alex would be interested in here, and it's a very weak pack, so getting a good playable card for red-white is a boon for him.
And then pack 1, pick 5. Again, with this run of, like, very few good playables in packs, he grabs a Ravenous Gigamole. I think, again, my guess is as a hate from the Corrupt drafter, maybe, more than it is a take for himself. Because he could take conscripted infantry here, the 3 and a red 3-1 that dies into a 1-1. He could take military discipline, which, you know, has a high win rate, is good in these low-to-the-ground aggressive decks. Single white aura with flash gives the creature plus one plus O and first strike until end of turn.
Yeah, I don't have strong feelings about this pick. I think, personally, I would have probably taken conscripted infantry just to give myself playables in the color of my dragon, but I don't fault anyone for taking the Gigamol. Like, Gigamol is the kind of card that could randomly be insane in team draft. Like, if you meet the conditions and it's a 2-for-1, like, it's the kind of card that could potentially go way up in value in team draft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it is just purely the best card in the pack. And so you can't be wrong to take that here this early. And then he gets to go Warlord's Elite pick 6 into Warlord's Elite pick 7, which is awesome for him.
Yes. And that's really where, like, the ripple effects of BK's decision to move into blue instead of into white really, I think, hurt their team ultimately and really help our team, because I got to float a ton of good white cards to Alex and also to you in pack 2.
Yes, for sure. Spoiler, I also get into white. Come on, Ben.
Whoops.
Yeah, and so then he's on just like mono cheap stuff to power out these elites, which is nice that he has two of them this early because he knows he really wants to do that. So pick 8, you know, instead of taking recommission, which I kept eyeing as like, oh, what a sick follow-up that would be to the double Warlords elite, he actually takes Monastery Swift Spear, the single red 1-2 haste prowess, because he knows he wants to be red because of the dragon and the signpost uncommon, and he knows he needs cheap plays for the double Warlord's Elite. So that's nice there. And then just grabs like Mind Worker as a random 2-drop, and he's off to the races, and his deck is just a lean, mean aggro fighting machine.
Yeah, excellent curve in the 1-drops, double Recruitment Officer, double Swift Spear, Combat Courier, and then a Military Discipline as a combat trick. The 2s, Phalanx Vanguard, double Bitter Reunion, double Rock Hunter, Whirling Strike, Aeronaut's Wings. So, like, not premium 2-drop creatures, but, you know, they fit the curve. He's got the double Warlord's Elite, Airlift Chaplain in the 3s, plus an Explosion. Triple Static Net in the 4-drop slot, which is wildly good. And then Falaji Vanguard, that red, white, gold uncommon, the cavalry, the dragon, and a Blitz Automaton, the 6-4 haste at the top of the curve.
Yeah, really nice here. Let's get into LSV's deck, because I think, you know, largely LSV's draft is, I think, a little straightforward, if not underpowered. But the first pick, I think, as we were even discussing before we started recording the show, is quite interesting. So he sees a ton of good green cards in his pack. All in a row, he's got Argothian Sprite, Sarenth Steelseeker, and Obstinate Baeloth. So a little 1-2-3 punch of good green cards, a common and uncommon. There's a Might Stones animation as well, just chilling, but I don't think that's in consideration. And then I think the other card worth chatting about here is Evangel of Synthesis. Blue, black for a 2-3. When it enters the battlefield, draw a card, then discard a card. And as long as you've drawn 2 or more cards this turn, Evangel gets plus 1, plus 0, and has menace.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting decision here. There's a lot of possible routes. Personally, I think I would land on Obstinate Baeloth, the 2GG 4/4. When ETBs, you gain 4 life. I love that card. I think it basically says if you're playing against an aggressive deck, it's very difficult for them to win the game after you resolve Obstinate Baeloth. And a 4-mana 4/4 is gigantic in this format. And if you're, you know, beating down at all, it's essentially impossible for your opponent to race also once you stick the Obstinate Baeloth.
Yeah, I think I, not only because it was our preview card, but also because I think it's just cheap and super powerful and engine-y, I land on the Sarenth Steelseeker over the Baeloth in terms of the green uncommons here. And I think those are both ahead of Argothian Sprite, even though we like them. And I think LSV has an interesting decision here either way, right? Because if you take a green card here, you're passing 2 good green cards. And so you can't like cut the other team. And then you potentially get in this awkward spot of hook cutting your own teammate who then takes a green card, though you can't really like plan on all that. Slash, he can take Evangel here, and there are 3 good possible wheels for a blue-black draw 2 deck in Curate, Might Stones Animation, and Moment of Defiance, plus a Weak Stone Subjugation as well as the enchantment removal spell. Any of those 4 could wheel too if he pushes down this blue-black path.
Yeah, and LSV does land on the Evangel of Synthesis. I think a very tough pick here about what you want to do.
Yeah, I think so. And then he goes on a little run here of, as he calls them, some cards that cantrip but don't affect the board. He gets an Energy Refractor, pick 2. It's a 2-mana artifact. ETBs, draw a card, pay 2 to add 1 mana of any color. Then he gets that Soul Guide Lantern, pick 3. Then he gets an Underground River, pick 4. That's the pack you opened with River and Door to Nothingness as the rares. So he gets a blue-black dual land to go along with his two artifacts and his blue-black signpost. Pick five. He takes his Curate versus Moment of Defiance. Do you have a thought here about what you like more in the draw two deck?
I don't really. In general, I like Moment of Defiance better as a card. And I have found even in the blue-black draw two decks, there's not a ton of room for something like Curate. Like usually you'd rather have the cantripping artifacts. There are just cards that do what Curate does that are better than Curate. So I think I would have taken Moment of Defiance. But again, I don't have strong feelings about this pick.
And honestly, weirdly, because LSV, I think, ends up with so little interaction in his deck, he might have even liked, there is a desynchronize here, four and a blue instant, target non-land permanent's owner puts it on the top or bottom of their library, scry two. I know you're not a big data boy these days, Ben. You know, this is the second top performing blue common.
I could not possibly care less than I do about desynchronize.
Pack one, pick six, he grabs Carrion Locust, the 3-mana 2/1 flyer in black. Pick seven, he does wheel three of those four blue-black cards that we shouted out. Curate, Moment of Defiance, and Weakstone Subjugation with only Mightstone's animation missing. And however, all three of those green cards we shouted out are gone. The Sprite, the Sarenth Steelseeker, and the Obstinate Baeloth. So he's got to be feeling pretty good in that regard. So he grabs Weakstone Subjugation here, gets himself a little removal spell, keeping in line with the blue-black plan, and gets, you know, more good-ish cards in terms of like the power of the packs plus it being a team draft. Scatter Ray, the counterspell, Stern Lesson that we were spotting after those two Mightstones animations, and wheels back-to-back pick 10 and pick 11, Latnam Adepts, 3 and a blue for a 3/3. Whenever you draw your second card each turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Latnam Adept. So despite, I think I would have ended up on a totally different path because I wouldn't have taken Evangel first. But after that, it feels really good. The problem is that there's just not much good cards opened in pack two and three for him to get past a good blue-black deck.
Right, yes. And in pack two, we were very fortunate that there were some good cards that were open that made their way to you. So LSV in pack two, like, I think had the chance to maybe cut some cards too and didn't. Pack two, pick one takes a Disfigure over Visions of New Phyrexia, which somehow made it all the way to me.
Yeah, made it through LSV to Alex to BK to you, pick four, which is awesome.
Yes. So some potential ways to stop our team from getting some good cards there as well.
Yeah. And if we look at his final build, he was, I, you know, watched his draft and some of his matches from his perspective. He was pretty unhappy with his deck. You know, he's got triple Latinum Adept. He's got Trench Stalker. He's got quite a few ways to draw two. He even got a Thopter Mechanic late in pack three, which is a gift because going into pack three, he really needed some two drops, has an Ashnod's Harvester as well in the two drop slot. The big problem for him, I think, is that he has like no interaction. He has Disfigure, Weakstone Subjugation, Gix's Caress for the hand, Machine Over Matter as a bounce spell, but like the overwhelming remorses, they're cut by his team. So that's a bummer there for sure.
All right, that takes us to your draft. So you are Lord Tupperware himself sitting down, pack one, pick one. You see the following cards as options. You got a cohort, you got an explosion, you've got a bushwhack. I think those are your three options.
I think so, yeah. Scrapwork, cohort, excavation, explosion, and bushwhack. And I think boiled down to scrapwork, cohort, and explosion with bushwhack in a clear third place for me. And I think I have to slightly shout out the data here as nudging me in the right direction and taking cohort. But I also, what really nudged me was cohort is colorless, right? What we've been talking about the past few weeks of like, don't be fooled. Like, this is not really a white card. Like, yes, it'd be best in a white deck, but I can play this in any deck. And maybe, you know, with my proclivity for drafting Refractors and Evolving Wilds, I can maybe pretty easily pay for the unearth cost here. And so I was just trying to think, like, what would I rather not face? / what is most likely to make my deck. And I think cohort ended up being the card, shockingly, that I would rather not see on the other side.
Yeah, cohort is great. Here's what I want. If I could have a Christmas miracle, I would get rid of Magic Data. I just wonder.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong. You're so wrong.
I'm wrong?
You're wrong. It's a bad take.
Bad take. I disagree. I think it would force people to get better at Magic. Like, so about a week into the format, a week and a half-ish into the format, that was when I started to realize, oh God, Scrapwork Cohort is really good. Still having not looked at the 17 lands data and started to pick it higher, like, how long do you think it takes? Like, 17 lands is accelerating the formats being like what they are quicker. I think that is almost certainly true. And I think helping cards like Scrapwork Cohort be discovered quicker than they would otherwise.
But like, what percentage of the drafting population is not at least already consuming content where they would receive this information anyway, and is drafting enough to like be a portion of the population, right? It's just so small that I don't think that subsection is of people is who we should be focusing on.
All right. That's fair.
Wow, that's it. He just gave up.
I gave up. I give in. I still can wish for my Christmas miracle, but that's a very reasonable argument.
I think data is a net positive. I think it is a good thing that exists that is mostly used for evil. Like few Circovitz and Two Duck Cubed, and like there's just like a small subset of people who can like use data for good, and then it is like mostly like a weapon used for evil.
It just feels like the answers to the test to me.
Whatever. This is a whole other podcast.
All right, so you got the cohort, pack one, pick one. Pack one, pick two. See the following cards as options. There's that glut of green cards. You got your choice of Sprite, Steelseeker, and Baloth.
Yeah, and I'm curious, you know, we know that you would take Baloth over Steelseeker in a vacuum. We know that I would take Steelseeker over Baloth in a vacuum. With Cohort in your pile already, does that change things at all for you?
It does. Love the Steelseeker here with Cohort already in your pile. So I completely agree with the Steelseeker here.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's what I landed on as well, right? Cohort's already a four drop for me. Double, potentially quadruple triggers with the Steelseeker if I can unearth it. So I like taking that there.
Yeah. And then pack one, pick three, fairly blank pack. You've got a choice between, I think, Power Stone Engineer, which is the 1 mana 2/1 that when it dies, it makes a tap Power Stone token. There's a Warlord's Elite and the Audacity.
Yeah, and I took Power Stone Engineer. You know, earlier in the day, I messaged you and Alex and I said, look, I just got to 50-someone with Aetherflux Reservoir. I got my dirtling out of my system. I'm ready to draft white 2-drops. And I stuck to my guns here and I took the Engineer. And I think, again, you know, there are some decks where Warlord's Elite is going to be better. But given my first two picks, I think Engineer is better because it makes a Power Stone, which triggers the Steelseeker. And there's potential for me to play Engineer on turn two, trade it off, get my Power Stone, play Scrapwork Cohort on turn three.
Yeah, love the Engineer pick here. I agree with that. Pack one, pick four, a largely blank pack for you. Really, you're deciding between Phalanx Vanguard, the 1 and a white 2/2 Vigi. Whenever an artifact ETBs under your control, it gets +1/+0 until end of turn. And there's an Evolving Wilds as well.
Yeah, and kept on my promise with white 2-drops and took the Phalanx Vanguard. And I think this was a conscious effort on my part to not lean into my dirtling. I think Ethan of, you know, is this our fourth showdown against Team Resources? I think I would take Evolving Wilds here. Like, oh, it's a team draft. Gotta like make my mana base good. Wilds and Refractor are higher picks. I think I also just often get beat by white 2-drops in these showdowns. So I didn't want to be on the receiving end of that this time.
Well, and I think you see that too a little bit in how the decks look at the end of all of this. I do think our team had more creatures and more cheap creatures, which yes, are very important in this format. Like, we ended up with those cards and they didn't. Now, like, I think the way the packs broke lent themselves to us, you know, naturally kind of doing that. But that is a thing that is in team draft, where if you get the things that are important, the other team is not getting those things.
Yeah, for sure. And that's like, my pack one is pretty unexciting. I take a Deadly Riposte next that I am hoping to not play in my aggressive white deck. I sort of bop around of, okay, Moment of Defiance, pick six. That's probably the best card and can pair well with my aggressive white cards. There's an Air Marshal that wheels pick seven. Maybe I end up in blue white soldiers. Like, I don't really have a draw, much like your draft. I don't really have a draw to anything, right? I have Scrapwork Cohort and Saren Steelseeker, and I have a couple white 2-drops, but I'm open for business.
Yeah, love it.
And that business comes pretty quickly.
Two. Yes, the business
in
does come.
Two. So I open Precursor Golem, which is great, period. Colorless, 5 mana, 3/3, makes 2 other 3/3s, has that, you know, copy spells with a golem text. In this pack is a Saren Steelseeker and a Yoshin Dissident. The green-white 1/1 human artificer, whenever an artifact enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. Okay, I mean, I'm taking Precursor Golem every time. There is a world where one of those two cards can wheel for me, right?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Pack two, pick two, I get past Yoshin Tactician, the blue-white signpost 3-4 that gives other soldiers plus one, plus one. Now that's pretty sweet. With that air marshal I got late, maybe I want to do that. There's Lauren, Disciple of History, the uncommon white gravedigger. And then in the rare slot, there's Lauren of the Third Path, 2 and a white, 2-1 with vigilance. When it enters the battlefield, destroy up to 1 target artifact or enchantment, and you can tap it to have you and target opponent each draw a card.
Yeah, that card is insane. It is essentially Flame Tongue Kabu in the format.
Yeah, so slam Lauren of the Third Path. Pack 2, pick 3, Yoshin Dissident.
And then you're like, maybe there's a chance.
Yeah, now I'm like, okay. Pick 4, I get a recruitment officer, the white 1-drop 2-1 that can search up mana value 3 or less things from the top 4 cards for 3 and a white. Airlift Chaplain, pick 5. Okay, Yoshin Dissident number 2, pick 6.
And then your fingers are crossed, like let it drum wheel roll. one time.
Pack 2, pick 7, Yoshin Dissident number 3. Now, this is insane. I'm looking at my deck, I've got like oops all 2-drops. But at this point, I have Scrapbook Cohort, Precursor Golem, and like no other artifacts.
Yes, so you are on must get artifacts mode.
Right, so I'm on mono artifacts mode, which comes slightly helpful in pack 2, pick 10. I get a Great Desert Prospector, 4 and a white, 3-2. When it enters the battlefield, create a tapped Power Stone token for each other creature you control.
I almost cut that card from you because I was so stressed about having passed the 3 dissidents. I was like pretty sure Marshall didn't use them, but like who knows in team draft, you know, like it just depends on what people open. Like maybe somebody down the road from Marshall was drafting red black and he was actually secretly green. Who knows? And I was like, no, I'm not taking this card either. Like we're going to get wrecked by those Yoshin Dissidents or it's going to be great for us.
And it was great for us. And then I also opened again, pack 3, pick 1. I got a Simeon Simulacrum, 3 mana, 2/1.
Oh my God.
When it enters the battlefield, put 2+ and +1 counters on target creature you control. And it has Unearth for 2GG. And I got to just, you know, I made sure I took artifact whenever I could. I got a Mishra's Research Desk, a Soul Guide Lantern. I don't really have any fixing other than 1 Sentinel Stalwart in my final deck to pay the Unearth cost on a Research Desk and a Scrapwork Rager that I ended up playing, but like just needed as many artifacts as I possibly could get my hands on. And I think I'm going to make this bid as the best team draft deck we've seen in the 11 team drafts we've done.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't have that good of a memory. I will allow it because this deck was sweet.
Yeah, Triple Yoshin Dissident, Lauren, Precursor Golem, Simeon Simulacrum. I mean, just like 3-0, 6-0 the draft. This deck was a beaut. I mean, this is the kind of deck I think you would enjoy in a regular draft, to be honest.
Yes, for sure. And just some elements of randomness in the team draft as well, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
if these are Evangels, then all of a sudden LSV's deck is insane and smashes us instead of the other way around. You know, the packs definitely broke our way this time.
Yeah, that's so, so true. So there you have it. That's a trip around the table here for the team draft. We'll have, again, all of those draft logs and deck picks for you where you download the episode if you want to, you know, see the drafts in more detail.
I have faith that we're going to rattle off the next 3 in a row to tie it up.
That'd be pretty sweet, I think. If we could go on a little run, I would like that for sure.
All right, great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thank you so much to TCG Player for sponsoring this podcast. If you are heading over to TCG Player for any and all purchases or signing up for a TCG Player subscription, please navigate your way over there via our affiliate link at lordsoflimited.com/TCG Player. You can check us out streaming. I'm at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. Mr. is spelled out. We're both under those same usernames on Twitter. And you can tweet at the podcast at Lords of Limited.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thank you so much for listening. And we will catch you next week for our 300th episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later. Ethan, I am happy to report that we were the victors over Team Resources in our Lords of Limited versus Team Resources Showdown. Did I said that way too many times.
Flawless beginning.
Ethan, I am happy to report that we were the victor in our every format. What is that? Is there a word for that? And a bi format? An annual format? But that's terrible again. God, let me we got a blooper. Ethan, I am happy to report that we were the victors in the Team Resources versus Low. Dang it.
We had a good run. We did. We almost made it to 300 episodes.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.